Well, we were in two rooms, basically the dining room and the living room. Well, actually, make that three rooms because we were in the den too. And I tell you what, I was so proud of myself. I did not overeat until.
Well, I did it. I never really do this before, but I managed to, like, for some reason I wasn't hungry during the day, so I didn't eat as much. And then when it came time, I was I could fit a big meal.
Yeah. Now, see, I think I skipped breakfast because we were heading out, and I got back around lunchtime and ate a little bit of chips, that kind of thing. So my first meal really wasn't until the Thanksgiving meal, around 2 or 3 or so. And even with that, I did a great job of eating moderately. But Saturday, I don't know what happened. I think I must have eaten enough for 2 or 3 people on Saturday.
You got to watch it with these long weekends.
You got that right. But so happy to be back with you, be back in the studio and with you now, and looking at something that you put together that I think is just so much of a testament to, I think, the beauty of diversity that has been a part of the American fabric for such a long, long time. Your book is entitled Revolution Song, A Story of American Freedom. And in your book, you have brought together a diverse cast of voices to share with us perspectives on American freedom. Before we get into the details of the book, if you would, Russell, share with us some of the things that took place, the events that took place in your life that led you to become a writer.
Oh, well, I think I always felt that I wanted to become a writer, but I just, you know, growing up, you don't know how to get there. So I went about it in a roundabout way. I studied philosophy at university because I was always interested in sort of deep matters. And then I kind of roamed the world after I graduated, and in doing so, I started to write some articles about the places that I was visiting. So I became a bit of a travel writer, just because I was in that mode of roaming. And so from that, then I began shifting into, I realized that was my way in. So from there, I started writing different kinds of articles, and then one of those became my first book, which was called Gospel Truth. It was about the search for the historical Jesus. Mm. And that was a way for me to kind of get in contact with my roots. I had been raised Catholic, and then I kind of left that, and this was kind of a way for me to get back into it. So I managed, you know, through articles and then books to pursue writing as it mattered to me, writing about things that mattered to me.
I imagine that made it easier for you to really pour your heart and soul into it.
Exactly. I mean, if you're doing it and it's not something that matters to you, that's a whole other line of work, and I'm glad that I don't have to do that.
I can imagine. And you mentioned that you started out writing as you were traveling about your travels. Was the writing something that you were able to be passionate about right away, since you were writing about something that you were interested in? Or did you find that the writing in and of itself, the passion for it, is something that developed over time?
No, the passion was there. I think initially I was very conscious that I was writing a piece for a particular magazine or newspaper or whatever, so I wanted to be careful to try to hit their parameters, you know, so I couldn't just write it exactly the way I might want to. I was trying to please them as well, and you have to do that. You always, you know, you're doing things for other people, not just for yourself.
Exactly, exactly. And so here you are now, several books later. Did your first book, you know, I mentioned that my wife and I left out early Thursday morning for Thanksgiving. We were actually heading to church, to a church service, and came on back after that, and so had a few errands to run afterwards. But I tell you what, I love the way we started off that day. Did you get the results that you were looking for when you wrote The Gospel Truth?
The results, I guess, yeah. I mean, it connected me in a way with the material that I had left, you know, so I had a new appreciation for it. And what I did is I followed, there's sort of, you know, when you talk about the historical Jesus, and of course this is a book I wrote a long time ago, but when you talk about the historical Jesus, I realized there are kind of two different groups of biblical scholars who had written about it. There was sort of a left-wing group and a right-wing group, if you will. Mm-hmm. And what interested me was that there was a significant overlap between the two.
Interesting.
So they might disagree on a lot, but where they agreed, I thought, well, that's interesting, because pretty much everyone who has devoted their life to studying this, this is the material that they can all agree on. So that's what I tried to focus on in the book.
Mm-hmm. And did you find that the part that they agreed on outweighed those areas where they disagreed?
Well, for me, they did. You know, and I think people get caught up in controversy.
Yes.
So that's where, you know, that's what generates news articles and things like that. But I think that there's a lot more agreement. And that's what, you know, just kind of to jump from that to where things are politically today. You know, I would like to see people get back to, I think there's a significant area of overlap that people on all sides can agree on. And I would love for people to be able to recognize, well, hey, the other side, basically, you know, 60% or whatever the percentage is, the other side agrees with me on all of this material. So let's focus on that.
And that's one of the things that I like about your book, Revolution Song. You involve race, class, and gender when you take a look at what America has to say about our quest for freedom. And so as we look at Revolution Song, A Story of American Freedom, was there anything in particular? I know you just mentioned that you wish we could come together and really just go about the business of seeing where we agree and can really connect based on our common ground. Was it that and or something else that inspired Revolution Song?
Yeah, I think that I write narrative history, which to me means stories of people in their time. And I wanted to write a book about America's founding that focused not just on, you know, the men in the powdered wigs who wrote all the fine words, but I wanted to include them. They were part of the story. But I also wanted to write about, you know, what would it feel like to be a woman at the time?
Yes.
What would it feel like to be a slave? What would it feel like to be just an ordinary worker? So that's what I slowly assembled the people. It took me about 2 years because most of those people, a slave, for example, their lives weren't very well documented. And I was writing nonfiction. So I needed to have a lot of, you know, I needed to have someone who wrote a lot of letters, who wrote a memoir or something like that. So I slowly put together this group of what turned out to be six people. And I also wanted them to fit together. Their paths cross in different places so that it's really one story. I'm a storyteller, and I wanted Revolution Song to be really a new kind of story about the nation's founding, one that speaks to people of different backgrounds, because we were diverse then and, you know, we're even more diverse now.
That is so true. And I think we'll see that diversity continue to grow in the coming years. You mentioned that you have this diversity of characters in the book, and I'm saying characters, these are real people. Can you give us a rundown of the people that you included in your book?
Yeah, I wanted to include one of the, there's six people, one of them everybody knows, and that's the most famous person of the period, George Washington. I wanted to include him because I wanted to just have him on the same level as everyone else. You know, so I give as much attention to him as I do to a teenage girl and to a Native American and to a common shoemaker. And I start all of them with their life at birth, and we weave through their lives until one by one they die. So I've got George Washington. I've got the shoemaker is a man named Abraham Yates. He was the ninth child of a blacksmith in Albany, New York, and he had this very humble beginning, but as things start to heat up, he wants to play a role. So he becomes a member of the city council, and he slowly works his way up to where during the revolution he's communicating with Washington and other leaders. So he's a real patriot. But then he always keeps this commoner's perspective, and he really distrusts elites. And after the war, he sees that the American leaders are becoming a new elite the same way the British were, you know, and so he fears them, and he's kind of trying to hold them to account. The hardest one to find was Venture Smith, a slave whose life was well documented, but when he was an old man, he dictated his life story, and it's a fascinating story. He was born in West Africa. He was captured, sold into slavery. He ends up growing up in New England, mostly in Connecticut, and he eventually buys himself and his family out of slavery. And what's interesting to me about it is he does that while white Americans are beginning this kind of drumbeat of all about freedom, you know, to get free from the British. And why I think it's interesting is he seems to have understood, well, whatever freedom they get, I don't think it's going to apply to me, so I have to take care of myself and my family. So he, in a way, to me, represents not just the promise of American freedom, but also the failures to live up to that promise. And there have been many, of course.
Yes. That is so interesting that you would point out that contradiction, that there was a fight for freedom while at the same time there was a fight to maintain slavery.
That's what it, you know, and there were a lot of people around, including several of the people around Washington who were closest to him, thought that they were fighting for freedom for everyone. And afterwards, after the Revolution, when they set up the new country and they really enshrined slavery in the Constitution, Lafayette, one of his aides, said, had I known this was going to be the result, I would never have lifted my sword in this fight, you know. So that contradiction was very apparent to many people in the period.
Our guest, ladies and gentlemen, is Mr. Russell Shorto. He is sharing with us some powerful, powerful facts that he was able to gather and put in together his book, The Revolution Song. How you all feeling right now? About freedom, that is. Stay with us. Russell Shorto and I will be right back.